Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Unbroken and Unbowed, A History of Black Protest in America by Jimmy R. Hawkins, narrated by Amir Abdullah. Introduction. Despite the pervasiveness of the concept of nothingness, worthlessness, inferiority, the Negro has continued to assert his worth and attempt to validate his claim to human rights. The history of the black man's protest against enslavement, subordination, cruelty, inhumanity, began with a seizure in African ports and has not yet ended. Never having been stripped of his humanness, despite all that he has endured, the Negro has continued to follow the advice of Frederick Douglass. There shall be no peace to the wicked. This guilty nation shall have no peace. We will do all that we can to agitate, agitate, agitate. Historian Joanne Grant. On August 12, 2016, NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick began a silent and at first unnoticed protest against police brutality. On that day, he sat on the bench while other players and coaches stood during the playing of the national anthem. He did that for two more games before a reporter asked him about it. "I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color," he replied. The next game, he kneeled in line with his standing teammates during the anthem. That got people's attention. Soon, players from his and other teams were also kneeling. Criticism was swift from inside and outside the sports world. Critics blamed diminishing viewership of NFL games on fan ire against the athletes. Dallas Cowboys team owner Jerry Jones, after initially standing and locking arms in solidarity with the players, later threatened that any player kneeling during the anthem would not play and would possibly be cut from the roster. Jones declined to comment about his inattentiveness when he was caught on video chatting with his son while the anthem played. The most vocal critic was President Donald Trump, who railed, "Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, they say, 'Get that son of a bitch off the field right now. He's fired. Fired!' That's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything we stand for, okay?" This was not the first time that race and the anthem resulted in controversy. Kaepernick was not the first African-American player to protest racism and was not the first to resist standing during the display of the American flag. The examples are endless. Jackie Robinson, the first black player to play Major League Baseball, gave public notice of his alienation from his nation's symbol. "I cannot stand and sing the anthem. I cannot salute the flag. I know that I am a black man in a white world." On March 8, 1973, Brown University cheerleaders refused to stand for the national anthem before a game on the grounds that the flag did not represent them as citizens of color living under legalized discrimination. That same year, at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, New York, an Eastern Michigan University African-American runner stretched on the ground as the Star Spangled Banner played. He stated that it was not arranged, he was simply stretching. Said his coach, "At our place, when they play the Star Spangled Banner at basketball games, a lot of the black students don't stand. I guess things are different here." In 2003, Tony Smith, a white basketball player for Manhattanville College, objected to the war in Iraq by turning her back to the flag during the playing of the anthem. ESPN writer Ralph Wiley described the impact of her actions. "But what Tony Smith doesn't know, and I hope to God she never does, is that very often these protests end with the ostracizing of the protesters rather than the evils they protest." In 2004, professional baseball player Carlos Delgado walked into the dugout during the anthem the entire season, citing disapproval with the war. He reflected in 2016 about Kaepernick. "At this moment, he decided to take a knee during the anthem, and he will have supporters and detractors. I think the important thing is for him to be consistent with his principles and his message. It is not normal that here we are in 2016 and we still have segregation, marginalization, and the abuse that we have against minorities, religious communities, and African-American communities. Former Denver Nuggets player Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf viewed the American flag as a symbol of oppression and racism and refused to come out of the dressing room as the anthem played for much of his career. In a 2017 interview, he reflected, "The anthem, the flag is supposed to represent the character of a people in terms of freedom and justice and fairness and all this stuff. But we don't necessarily see that, especially people of color. We've never been really shielded by the rule of law." As this short list shows, African-American athletes have faced severe criticism and charges of being unpatriotic for these protests. This was no less true during the Kaepernick controversy. NFL player Eric Reed, the first player to join Kaepernick in kneeling, commented in 2017, "It baffles me that our protest is still being misconstrued as disrespectful to the country, flag, and military personnel. We chose it because it's exactly the opposite. We chose to kneel because it's a respectful gesture. I remember thinking our posture was like a flag flown at half-mast to mark a tragedy. It should go without saying that I love my country, and I'm proud to be an American. But to quote James Baldwin, exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually." As in every other area of life, when black athletes offered social critique, the backlash was brutal. Sociologist Stephen R. Cureton said, "The challenge for the African-American male in America has been a constant struggle to reconcile the seemingly dominant social dynamic that black masculinity is significantly less human than white masculinity. As long as athletes performed superbly on the playing field and were acquiescent off it, they received the temporary approval of white America. As long as they exhibited patriotic fervor and stood during the national anthem with a hand over their heart and were silent concerning racism off the field, they received measured acceptance. African Americans, the unspoken social agreement went, should be happy just to be able to live in America and be grateful for all of the opportunities afforded. They should just shut up and play ball." Sports journalist Zach Junk wrote, "Such acts of protest, often by black athletes, and carried out recently by quarterback Colin Kaepernick and others who have knelt for the anthem at NFL games, have a long history in the United States and an equally lengthy tradition of angering mostly white fans, sports officials, and politicians." In 1968, legendary white sportscaster Brent Musburger described John Carlos and Tommy Smith's raised fists at that year's Mexico City Olympics as done by black-skinned stormtroopers, destined to go down as the most unsuitable demonstration in the history of protest, ensuring maximum embarrassment for the country that is picking up the tab for their room and board here in Mexico City. One gets a little tired of having the United States run down by athletes who are enjoying themselves at the expense of their country. He followed up 5 decades later by attacking the entire 49ers team and Kaepernick for taking a knee. Colin Kaepernick not only put his career on the line, but backed up his on-field stand with off-the-field donations. His Colin Kaepernick Foundation provided $1 million to local charities, matched by the San Francisco 49ers. At the end of the 2016 season, his teammates honored him with the Lynn Eshmont Award as the player who demonstrated inspirational and courageous play. Time magazine placed him on the October 2016 cover for fueling a debate about privilege, pride, and patriotism. He received the Sports Illustrated 2017 Muhammad Ali Legacy Award. Nike made him the face of their Just Do It campaign. Overlapped on his picture were printed the words, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. Hashtag Just Do It." Amnesty International awarded him its highest honor, the 2018 Ambassador of Conscience Award. And at the end of the 2016 season, the San Francisco 49ers, told Kaepernick that they would not be re-signing him because he did not fit their future plans, and he became a free agent. Despite being an elite athlete in the prime of his career, one who had led his team to a Super Bowl, Kaepernick has remained out of football since. Black patriotic protest. Over the centuries, the right to protest in America has always been racialized. For many white Americans, there is disbelief, even denial, that the players' actions have anything to do with love of country. Whites exercise their First Amendment rights, while blacks are deemed unpatriotic, ungrateful, and contextually inappropriate. In a 2017 Washington Post article titled, "From Jimi Hendrix to Colin Kaepernick, Why Black Americans' Patriotism Often Looks Like Protest," Robin C. Spencer wrote that black people have asserted their inextricable contributions to the history of this country while simultaneously protesting the racism embedded in the American nation-state since its inception. And yet, the patriotism of the black activist has again come into question as dozens of American athletes have taken a knee during the national anthem. Michael Tesler wrote in the Washington Post, "For many, to be American is implicitly synonymous with being white, and that whiteness and American patriotism are deeply linked." He listed studies where whites associated being white with patriotism, while being black equated as the opposite. Given the history of continuous oppression that black Americans experience, the question is not, why are blacks unpatriotic? Rather, one could reasonably ask, why are blacks patriotic at all? In the face of centuries of crippling structural racism and white supremacy, African Americans have proven their patriotism time and time again. There has been no other racial demographic to suffer generations of government-enforced subjugation, yet retain an elevated level of patriotism. African Americans have fought in America's wars, often at disproportionately high rates. Blacks vote in presidential elections at rates similar to whites, and in 2008 and 2012 exceeded those of whites. African Americans, even when faced with legalized oppression, retained unwavering love for their nation, even as they demanded the rights of American citizenship. Blacks remained loyal to a country whose primary intent was to keep them in their place as second-class citizens, even as they did all that was asked of them out of a desire to participate in the dream called America. The jazz singer Nina Simone once said to an interviewer, "When I was young, I knew to stay alive. As a black family, we had to work at it. We had to keep secrets. We never complained about being poor or being taken advantage of or not getting our share. We had to keep our mouths shut. So, I knew to break the silence meant a confrontation with the white people of that town. And though I didn't know I knew it, if the black man rises up and says, 'I'm not just going to do that anymore,' he stands to get murdered. But no one mentioned that, which is indeed quite strange." It is ironic that white men like Eric Rudolph, Timothy McVeigh, and Ted Kaczynski perpetrate extreme violence while disparaging the U.S. government as oppressive to their liberty. While it has been the black race which has faced persecution while being accused of lacking patriotism. The origins of black protest. The black protest movement did not begin with Colin Kaepernick. Far from it. During every period of oppression, active, deliberate, and ongoing movements have evolved to match the levels of oppression experienced. Black protest is defined as the variety of ways African Americans have resisted oppression, racial discrimination, and exploitation. It has taken place through overt resistance by public demonstrations, nonviolent and violent revolt, marches, petitions, publications, sit-ins, migration, community organizing, and boycotts. Throughout American history, the penalty for black protest has been severe and life-threatening. So covert action was a necessary approach, especially during slavery and Jim Crow. Protest was found in the ways blacks sought to undermine oppressive systems, through teaching children how to survive, for example, and in establishing institutions of self-help and empowerment. Even philanthropy, paying it forward, has an element of protest. A wide range of strategies and programs was used to make life better for black Americans and oppressed people. The Anti-Defamation League states, "There are a variety of potential goals for protest. Influence public opinion, draw attention to and share information about a perceived injustice, gain a wide audience for the cause, push public policy or legislation forward, learn more about an issue, connect with others who feel passionate about the issue, speak one's truth, and bear witness." Protests can also provide inspiration and a sense of being part of a larger movement. The overarching purpose of protests is to demand change. Protest movements were begun by the first African Americans and continued by their descendants each generation. According to Lerone Bennett Jr., the Negro Rebellion of 1960 through 65 is a continuation on a higher level of desperation of the evaded confrontations of the past. While each generation felt that it was the first to demonstrably rebel, all were part of a continual line of insurgents. Alicia Garza, a co-founder of the Black Lives Matter movement, stated, "It is important to us that we understand that movements are not begun by any one person, that this movement was begun in 1619 when black people were brought here in chains and at the bottoms of boats, because there was resistance before Black Lives Matter, and there will be resistance after Black Lives Matter, a continuation of a uniquely American struggle led by black people." Africans who were brought to the land of slavery rejected attempts to subjugate them, resisting with both reserved defiance and outright force. This involved such things as enslaved men and women running away, and indentureds working off debt to gain freedom and land rights. After permanent slavery was instituted in the latter half of the 17th century, rebellions occurred aboard slave ships, and in every region slavery existed. The earliest uprisings were in the colonial North, in cities such as New York City, and then traveled downward throughout southern states from Virginia to Louisiana. During the country's two internal wars, blacks fought for the side that promised freedom. Between 1866 and 1877, they used their freedom to pursue political office, rewrite state constitutions, and create schools. They confronted presidents who lacked political and moral courage. Veterans of the two world wars took up arms to defend their homes, families, and neighborhoods against white mobs, the police, and National Guard. In response to nationwide racial violence, they founded institutions as a form of protest to support families and educate children. Civil rights organizations created during the 1920s and 1930s defended a people under constant attack. The NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, mounted protest after protest and eventually won the judicial battle against racial segregation. During the Great Migration, millions left the South and resettled in the North, and their voting strength became a factor in determining presidential elections. The 1950s ushered in a period of organized protest that within a decade caused an awakening in the American consciousness about the harm inflicted by white supremacy. The final evolution was black participation in areas previously denied to them: business, education, and politics. The methods, strategies, and declarations have been remarkably similar in the prophetic messages and actions proclaimed over the centuries. Transportation protests from the days of segregated stagecoaches to Montgomery buses shared the strategies of boycott, confrontation, and disruption. The Reverend Lot Carey of the controversial American Colonization Society, an 18th century group that attempted to secure passage for black Americans back to African countries, said, "I wish to go to a country where I shall be estimated by my merits, not by my complexion." The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. echoed those sentiments in 1963 when he spoke the famous words, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Also in the 1960s, Malcolm X urged black Americans to liberate themselves by any means necessary. As far back as 1843, the Reverend Henry Highland Garnet urged enslaved blacks to use every means, both moral, intellectual, and physical. Black confrontation influenced the transformation of America from a slave-justifying nation to one that now recognizes the evils of slavery, even as it grapples with the legacies of that same institution. The white population's growing awareness that human rights are due to all peoples owes much of this awareness to black resistance. Blacks keenly and accurately scrutinized America's debased legal system in contrast to her stated creeds. The enslaved scoffed, both privately and publicly, at hollow, pious declarations of liberty or death. Vincent Harding noted that enslaved Africans challenged the justice, authority, and legitimacy of their captors. Their words were among the earliest forms of what we shall call the great tradition of black protest. If those European ships indeed represented the rising white racist nation-state and its developing systems of economic and cultural exploitation, then the black voices of the Gold Coast were also part of a beginning tradition of radical challenge to such a state. They declared that for them, this system had absolutely no legitimacy. This was black radicalism at the outset. America marketed herself as a land of liberty and justice in the purity of daylight, yet the darkness of night revealed a more sinister, racist demeanor executed by monstrous violence. The illiterate enslaved women intellectually critiqued the hypocrisy of the country's revolutionary zeal. She was acutely aware of America's failures to live by her own moral and ethical standards, immortalized in the Declaration of Independence, that all are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. All really meant all white men, and not even all of them, just the ones who owned property. The founding fathers mouthed pious slogans demanding political freedom from Britain, yet theologically justified their enslavement of human beings as the will of God. Whites applied the demands of liberty in word only and designated it the domain of the white people, for the white people, and by the white people. Through their shared experience of racial and economic exploitation, enslaved blacks reinterpreted patriotism and inscribed upon whites the inscription of patriotic hypocrisy. Frederick Douglass wrote in a scathing essay, "What, to the American slave, is your 4th of July? I answer, a day that reveals to him, more than all other days in the year, the gross injustice and cruelty to which he is the constant victim. To him, your celebration is a sham. There is not a nation on the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of these United States at this very hour." Several prominent whites also subscribed to this thinking. President Abraham Lincoln privately disclosed a similar scrutiny in an 1855 letter to friend Joshua Speed. "As a nation, we began by declaring that all men are created equal. We now practically read it, all men are created equal, except Negroes. When it comes to this, I should prefer emigrating to some country where they make no pretense of loving liberty. To Russia, for instance, where despotism can be taken pure and without the base alloy of hypocrisy. Key throughout American history is the pivotal role in protest played by the masses of Black Americans. Much attention has been given in history books to national leaders such as Booker T. Washington, Ida B. Wells, W.E.B. Du Bois, and Martin Luther King Jr. But scant attention has been given to the ways in which Black people resisted in the absence of singular national leadership. Slave insurrections, Black towns and settlements, plantation survival techniques, abolitionist activities, the Underground Railroad, mass migrations, and voting blocs demonstrate collective unity and resolve to resist oppression. Individual resistance in one area, almost supernaturally, mirrored actions in different locales throughout the nation. These materialized an assemblage of methods used by men and women whose identities shall forever be unknown. A spirit motivated resistors to plan rebellions and to migrate from southern killing fields. And when competent leadership appeared, thousands marched, withstood beatings, spent nights in jail, and braved threats to act in unison to resist, resist, resist. Masses of people of African descent altered the course of this nation in ways still unacknowledged. One Duke University researcher on the Behind the Veil project, which gathered Jim Crow era recollections, wrote, "When you really listen to people, they were resistant to the laws and to the insults given to them by white supremacy, and they resisted it in all kinds of ways, both hidden and public. The masses relied on one another, shared hardships, and developed coping techniques effective across different contexts. They relied on one another because there was no one else. While leaders sought the ears of powerful and influential whites, Black parents raised their children, started businesses, built homes, fought in wars, and even fought among themselves, but they were forever moving forward toward a better day." To quote historian Edward E. Baptist, "What mattered was to matter." And that meant doing what was best for family to survive with a hope for a better future for their children and grandchildren. Life was a struggle, but it was a struggle filled with sacrifice so that their children would receive the right to live fully as American citizens. Henry Louis Gates Jr., in Colored People, a memoir, wrote, "My grandfather was colored. My father was Negro, and I am Black." A vital component of protest and resistance has been the quest for identity. One could argue that protest birthed the drive for identity. Eugene D. Genovese wrote, "The question of nationality, of identity, has stalked Afro-American history from its colonial beginnings, when the expression, a nation within a nation, was already being heard. Every race, tribe, and ethnic group pursued identity formation. Other races project culture, tradition, language, and familial memory as a bond to distant lands never visited. Ethnic loyalty and education changed Oriental to Asian and Spanish-speaking to Hispanic, Latino/Latina, and Latinx." Gates wrote, "In your lifetimes, I suspect, you will go from being African Americans to people of color, to being once again colored people. I've tried to evoke a colored world of the 50s, a Negro world of the early 60s, and the advent of a Black world of the later 60s. The uniqueness of the African American experience is that no other demographic has had to recreate itself time and time again. Blacks have had to forge a new sense of self-awareness for each subsequent generation, each of which had to contend with a change in status, often pressured by outside forces. Attempts to overcome suppression called for the creation of a new identity as slaves became freedmen and as the disenfranchised became voters. African Americans are the only people to have had their ethnic heritage permanently erased. They were left with few surviving cultural traditions as their linguistic, cultural, and familial heritages were successfully expunged on the crossing from Africa to America.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?